everyone, to the Film Vault. Dennis Anderson, I'm Brad Beshbury, host for today. Top five time, top five actor-director teams brought to us by, hold on right here.
Tyler Mayer
is in the second page. I didn't see it. Thanks, Tyler, for assigning us what ended up being a very fruitful topic, as I alluded to earlier.
We need a better adjective. We're always saying fruitful.
Very bountiful topic.
There you go. Thanks, Brad.
It bore fruit.
It's low.
It was fruity.
Thank you.
High standing vegetables.
I don't think I say that anymore. Don't say that.
High standing vegetables. As my buddy Tyler says. Hey, I'd like to give a plug.
Other Tyler.
Plug to another film podcast. Mm. It's called Cinematics. It's a program that I created a number of years ago with my buddy Greg Srzavosti, who's an actual critic, and he does all sorts of interviews. He's been interviewing people for 25 plus years. And I've been doing some good work over there for a number of years, Brian. And just recently, I've been kind of stepping back, and my buddy Eric Holmes and Bruce Perkey have filled my large
Holmes
shoes.
Boy.
And if you like to hear about a bunch of esoteric movies, smaller movies that come out each week, these guys see fucking everything, and they have opinions on all of it too. So, just another little movie show out there to get even more movie information from. That's
all. Okay.
All right.
Well, played.
Thanks for allowing me to do that. There's a lot of competition out there. It's fierce, Brian. Last thing we need is be siphoning off some of our listeners to other podcasts. But if you'd like to add, not replace, can't replace this show.
No, undoable.
This show's unreplaceable. You're not going to find anything else like this.
A lot of good actor-director teams I had to leave off the list, as is the nature of Top 5. But I could have made a robust list out of the also-rans.
Yeah, it's going to be a very long also-ran list.
Not for me. I have 10.
So you don't have any left over for the also-ran?
I do. That's the point. Including one that I put atop my list initially. I was like, well, that's an obvious one. And looking at it, really considering it, I'm like, they didn't make that many good movies together. They made a lot of movies. Not necessarily good.
Yeah, how did you go about this? Like, just like good strings of movies?
I added up all the Oscar nominations.
Did you really?
No.
I wouldn't be shocked by that at all.
So this, I think, is a list.
You took the three favorite movies and you added up the Rotten Tomatoes score.
So what? The criteria. Well, because we were given criteria.
Yeah, we were. Couldn't be tentpole movies. They couldn't be comic book movies. And there had to be a minimum of three collaborations. Mm. That's what Tyler Mayer laid down for us. I'm like, all right, buddy. All right. There's a lot of fucking rules. Not right. Mean rules. But it turned out that was helpful. Not that, you know, we would have had comic book fucking movies on our list.
Anyways, I only have a couple.
We're not allowed to have any rubber
shit. And this is also an example, I think, but once we get there, where there's an obvious, you know, number one, sometimes it happens.
Yeah.
Sometimes
I went back and forth on that.
Michael Bay and Optimus Prime.
Careful. Michael Bay and what's the actor? The actor who voiced, never mind. Peter Cullen. Peter Cullen.
Easy, easy, easy. Tyler Mayer has assigned us a number of movies, including
Shia LaBeouf,
Paint Your Wagon, Lords of Chaos, Inc. Oh, I just did this last week. Mm-hmm. And then his top five that he did in the past were top five Coen brother characters, which was a good one as well.
Nice. Hey, that might come up on our list.
Bri.
Might.
Now I know too much. I just know too much, bro. All right, let's go. And Tyler has a list as well. Let's just not know. That's While We're Young. It's a Noah Baumbach reference film. That's Adam Driver's character talking to Ben Stiller about not knowing something rather than looking it up on IMDb. It's a great line.
Overexplained.
Just now?
Just now.
Well, I mean, people might be confused and frustrated as to why you're just out of nowhere saying, let's just not know.
Let's just not know. Why does the bald one not want to know things? The producer right there can Google it.
All right, let's do this.
Well, let's hear the listener top five.
That's not how this works, Brian. Right? Want me to kick things off? I'll kick things off. Number five for me. Mm-hmm. I'm going light. I'm going
really?
Light,
okay.
But it's honest, right?
Okay.
Because all I can do is be honest, okay? And when I was looking at this myriad of collaborations over the last 100 plus years, my God, there's a lot.
There's a whole Wikipedia page just about actor-director compilation or combinations.
A number of them stood out to me, Brian, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. But one, I just kept going back to.
You should go
to.
With the good ones.
And I'm like, you know what? John Hughes.
Don't do this.
Working with Anthony Michael Hall.
It's a good
was point. A big, big
yeah.
part of my development as a child and growing up and watching those movies, The Breakfast Club, Weird Science to a lesser extent,
Candles, yeah.
but 16 Candles.
To a lesser extent, he was the star of that movie.
Co-star. No, but lesser extent to me, because I didn't love the old Weird Science as much as I love the 16 Candles and Farmer Ted, Farmer Fred.
Weird Science has great moments, but they're spaced out.
Yeah, it was a Weird Science to me was a little too low hanging fruit with a lot of the jokes.
Yeah, so. And I remember researching that for a list many years ago. And it was like, oh, he wrote it over a weekend. I'm like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That adds up.
Kind of. Yeah. It was just a fever beat off dream that he had and he wrote it all down right after he's done. But 16 Candles, the character that he created in 16 Candles, and
go on.
You know, we went back to the well. He played different. Well, Weird Science, his character in Weird Science was very similar to his character in 16 Candles, like a horny young high school age kid.
Nerd.
But I mean, The Breakfast Club, like he was a much nerdier, different version of those other two characters.
Brian.
You probably related.
His character's name.
He couldn't get the trunk to turn on the light, Brian.
The trunk.
Have you not seen Breakfast Club at night?
I haven't seen it in quite some time. What's the
ceramics? He didn't do too well.
Oh, yes.
The elephant's trunk was supposed to turn on a light and he couldn't get it. See, you know, he's a nerd in some areas.
Didn't he bring a flare gun to school?
I don't recall that.
Spoilers.
What? Flare gun?
That's what he got in trouble for.
Yeah.
That's why
you're saying
he just
brought a gun to school and they're like, oh, no, what are we going to do? It's a flare gun.
I just finished ridiculing you for not knowing tidbits from that movie.
And I hit you back.
I'm missing a flare gun. I don't remember that.
All right.
This is like we're... Never mind.
It's like we're what? You going to do a little, deep dig there?
This is like when Snatch, when Brad Pitt got up off the mat and knocked that guy out one punch.
It's nothing like that
at all.
It's
exactly like that.
So you're Brad
Pitt. Same physique.
That's right. I'm Brad Pitt in this respect. You're the big fat guy. Anderson is wounded.
Anderson's face is
not nice at all.
In the movie.
Do you remember how he...
I'm Pikey.
Do you remember how Brad Pitt the Pikey was introduced in that movie? First time we see him?
He was incontinent.
No, he's in the... He's
he was crouching down and he's pooping.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was Brad Pitt's idea. He thought it'd be funny.
That was the first time he saw
crouching down and pooping like out in a parking lot.
Okay.
So that lines up. Every time I see you, I imagine you're pooping.
Fine.
The look on your face usually looks like it's mid-poop. Yeah. So I can see what you're saying now. I agree with you. You are very much like Brad Pitt from Snatch.
Mid-poop?
Yeah.
Like a mix of struggle and joy?
Yes. Kind of like James Franco all through the Spider-Man movies. Or Spitterman, as the Europeans call it. Spitterman.
Yeah. The Jewish superhero.
There is a character in one of the
Spider-Man
cartoons, and he's like a fish creature guy,
right.
And he's very proper, and he has an accent, and he does refer to him as Spitterman. And Atticus and I think that's very funny.
That's cute.
Okay, yeah, so that's Farmer Fred. Anthony Michael
Farmer
Hall.
Ted. Farmer Ted.
Yeah, he goes back and forth, though. He's Farmer Fred sometimes. There's a scene where he's like, Farmer Ted, Farmer Fred. Farmer Fred, Farmer Ted.
That may be true.
John Hughes, Anthony Michael Hall. Guys, they get a little bit more relevant.
Heady?
A little headier.
That's a good one, though, because I saw lists saying, what's this book? John Hughes and Molly Ringwald.
Candy.
No, not enough.
John Candy.
Not enough.
Yeah.
Number five, should we give Tyler the pole position?
Sure.
Let him clean up.
You got the list right there.
I do.
Nice. Number five for me, I have the comedic entry, which this is an example. I guess they're...
Am I writing down both of these?
What's that?
Am I writing down both?
You don't have to write down any of them. We want to.
Wait, what do you mean?
Nothing to link to.
Doesn't he?
Nothing to link to.
No, send the list.
I send it every time.
Do you?
No, he doesn't.
No, you don't, Brian. You're asked so little.
I send it most of the time.
He will certainly send it this time.
When harangued.
Go ahead.
This is an example of a director, I think, really getting the most out of an actor, but also bringing that actor to the masses. Now, of course, Will Ferrell was known from SNL, but I think he was put over the top by Adam McKay. I'm talking about Adam McKay and Will Ferrell. Five films, Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, The Other Guys, and of course, Anchorman 2. A varying quality. Anchorman 2 wasn't fantastic, but that character, Ron Burgundy, was born to play that role. That's his most I think it's his most identifiable role. I think it's his most famous role. I'm going to stand by that. Anderson has no thoughts on
that. Oh, I mean, I'll allow you to stand by that.
I have no thoughts. Speaking of more heady, I'm going with my dramatic choice. Number five, Alfred Hitchcock found his everyman in Jimmy Stewart. Alfred Hitchcock and Jimmy Stewart made four films together. Two very good, two all-time classics. Talk about Rope, Rear Window, The Man Who Knew Too Much, and of course, Vertigo, all between 1948 and 1958. They collaborated, like I said, on four films, and Hitchcock and Stewart, I believe, I know Cary Grant was in three or four, but I think Jimmy Stewart might have been the actor, the lead actor anyway, who was in the most Hitchcock films.
That's why they call him Jimmy Hitchcockian.
I didn't realize that.
They did that.
That's news to me.
Yeah, he was in four, as was Cary Grant. He was also in four. There you go. And Grace Kelly was in three. Pat Hitchcock.
She only acted for like 10 years, too, before she became princess.
Dorian Lang was also in
three.
She was
only princess for about 10 years.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, nice. Well done. All right. Now we go on to Tyler's.
Now let's hear Tyler's number five.
Tyler's list number five for Tyler Mayer is Coen Brothers and John Goodman.
Excellent, excellent.
My favorite movie from this team up is The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, so that's the way that Tyler went about it. Is he named his favorite of the collab? And I talked to. To
I
Tyler.
Guess I could do that too.
Yeah, you can do it. And Vertigo, you gonna say Vertigo?
I actually
can I admit that I just don't get
Vertigo. I kind of like Rear Window more than Vertigo. Is that a sacrilege?
No, I agree with you.
Okay, I go Rear Window.
I need to see Vertigo again, maybe, but I just don't get it. I didn't get it. I don't get Hitchcock though. Really, I think I'm
really.
Too, I think I'm. Too,
I feel like he. All right.
No. He's too controlled.
And Kubrick wasn't?
Kubrick was controlled in a different way, a much different way. Kubrick was controlled.
I feel like we're splitting hairs.
Yeah, it's Kubrick.
That's a valid criticism.
Kubrick was controlled with.
That's a valid criticism of Hitchcock, but to compare.
I know. Believe me, I've grappled with this with myself as well because it's one thing that I dislike about one, and I love about the other. But
they're also different eras in the sense that Hitchcock was that old Hollywood where it was maybe wooden by today's standards, and Kubrick, of course, let the actors, you know, let the drama and the action breathe.
I think what I respond to, what I land when I'm grappling with this brain with myself, is that Hitchcock was a slave, for lack of a better term, to the story, whereas Kubrick was much more character based. The story was important.
That's fair.
But he was, and he would tell the story and things about the character within the mise en scene. Whereas Hitchcock, you know, he famously mise en scene. Hitchcock would famously, you know, treat his actors like cattle, livestock.
And that's right.
I think he referred to them as just livestock. Even
one more chess piece to be moved.
Right. So
okay, that invalidates number five, but.
Five chess pieces.
That's right.
John Goodman was in six roles.
Nope, he was not.
With the Coen Brothers.
I saw the, I tweeted about why it actually. There was a rare,
Jesus Christ.
a rare error on Wikipedia. It's actually seven films. If you look at the six films the Wikipedia lists, they don't list the Big Lebowski.
No, because he's not in that.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I just thought Tyler said he was, but.
No, that was Milius.
Oh, shit. I should have.
Playing himself.
Boy, do I feel foolish.
It's true. Why do they?
Isn't that weird?
What are they doing?
Like the most obvious one.
Maybe he has to be removed because he's afraid of John Milius. Remember the Milius documentary that we saw? I was talking to Tyler about this.
That's the one thing I remember most was how he inspired the character.
I kept waiting for them to get to that, and they didn't. And then it's in the post credits. There's like a little quick clip.
Oh, it was
of Goodman saying, "And I may or may not have been channeling John Milius, something along those lines," because apparently, like it's like a dead ringer.
Yeah, a lot of traits, a lot of qualities encapsulated in Walter.
Yes. John Milius, of course, director of Conan the Barbarian, amongst many other things. Red Dawn, which created writer. PG-13. Yes.
Part of that.
Red Dawn. All right, Barbara.
It's your turn. After Tyler.
It is. Number four for me is a guy named Billy Wilder, who, prolific, right? Made many, many movies. But it's his work with Jack Lemmon that really makes it worthy of being number four on my list here, Brian. Now, this could have been considered like comedic because you got the comedic thing. However, The Apartment, which is my number favorite.
Well, that's a comedy.
My number one. I would not call The Apartment a comedy. I would not. It's got comedic elements, but I don't even know if comedy would
be. Yeah, it's probably a dramedy by today's standards.
But Billy Wilder and Jack Lemmon teamed up for Some Like It Hot, which is probably what most people know, 1959. Then they got back together the following year with The Apartment.
The Apartment is under the guise of comedy, but it is a sort of heavy movie.
Irma La Dolce, which I have not seen. The Fortune Cookie. Avanti, which I have not seen. And The Front Page, which... was it call me Dolomite? What was it? We really like that. I just have a hard time with the title. Dolomite.
Dolomite is my name.
Dolomite is my name. Front page. Oh, that's
right. The one that went to see.
Yeah, they went to see The Front Page, and they're like, "This is what white people like. What the fuck is this?" That said, I really like The Front Page, and that was a Billy Wilder, Jack Lemmon team up, 1974. They also did Buddy Buddy. I have seen 2/3 of these. But the three that I really, really respond to are Some Like It Hot, like everyone else, The Front Page, which I really enjoyed, and of course The Apartment, which is just, I assigned that to you, right? And it's just an all-time classic.
It's great.
Just
fantastic. I loved it.
Let me look up The Apartment.
Out of its time.
Comedy on there in the old IMDb.
They list like 10 genres.
Oh, usually three.
Is that the one where he's renting it out to his
boss?
Yeah, that was great. I did like The Apartment.
All right. Are you waiting on me with bated breath? Guys, I don't like this. Why don't you move on? I'll let you know. I'll catch up with you.
Comedy.
Go on down. Go on down there.
Number four for me in the comedic department is...
Ah, shit.
Just answers it.
Comedy, drama, romance. All right, go ahead.
It's crazy to think that we would not... We maybe would not... If not, a huge talent like... Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have said huge. A massive... God damn it. A substantial talent like Melissa McCarthy if it wasn't for Paul Feig.
You're talking about Paul Feig? Really?
Yeah. We're going Paul Feig and Melissa McCarthy. Hmm. They had an incredible run of movies. Bridesmaids, of course, would put her on the map. Best Supporting Actress nomination, The Heat, and Spy. Ghostbusters, maybe not quite up to snuff.
Spy, not so much.
Oh, I like Spy. Get I disagree. Spy's funny.
We've talked about this. It's like made for TBS Sunday afternoon.
No, I disagree. Statham as the way over the top, overly serious secret agent. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
You see the spy there?
No.
Spy's funny.
You messed up.
I haven't seen The Heat either.
Heat's pretty good.
Oh, The Heat's good.
I saw The Heat twice in the theaters. Two times.
How many times?
Two times. Thank you. I liked it a lot.
Did you get the papers?
Kind of fell. Yeah, that's what I was doing there. Kind of fell off the second. It didn't quite.
I'm adding it to the list.
But The Heat's pretty good. Billy Burr's in there too. William Burr.
I think The Heat's better, but it is definitely better. But Spy. Don't sleep on Spy.
Devon McDonald's in there as well. Mm. All right.
It's a genetic condition. The guy who's albino. They keep making fun of his pale skin. Mm-hmm. It's a genetic condition. Anyway, good run there for Paul Feig and Melissa McCarthy. And of course, number four for me on the dramatic side, Paul Thomas Anderson and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh yeah, they made a lot of movies together.
In fact, it was the one that put it over the top for me. Of course, he was fantastic. Small role in Heart 8. Mm-hmm. God, he was great as the obnoxious crap slayer. All right, put it here, old timer. Come on, roll us a seven. Come on, old timer. All right, look at this. See this right here? Put it around right here, old timer. Come on, get us a drink. He was so obnoxious and so good. Boogie Nights, of course, Magnolia. But the one that put it over the edge for me, Punch Drunk Love. Mm-hmm. Mattress Man. Mm-hmm. He's the mattress man. He was so great. Didn't need to be in the movie.
You see the short that they did?
Yeah, yes.
Falls off. Yeah, it actually happened, apparently.
It was so good.
You didn't even see The Master, dude, which is probably...
I saw The Master.
Say The Master.
The Master.
I mean, which is probably a kid. It's the one leading role that he has.
I know.
The slew of movies that you just listed.
PTA also made three great movies with Philip Baker Hall. We did a top five of his for Patreon, I think, a couple of months ago when he passed away. But Philip Seymour Hoffman... And Paul Thomas Anderson, my number four. Five films together.
Every Paul Thomas Anderson movie I see now, I just imagine where Philip Seymour Hoffman would have been, should have been, might have been. Yeah. He would have been, rumor has it, that he would have played the lead kid in Licorice Pizza.
Oh my God, that would have been a bold choice.
That was actually his son, so he kind of was in there, right? That's Philip Seymour's son. Philip Seymour Hoffman's
son. His genetic material was in there.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a collaboration. The collaboration continues.
That's right.
Point five.
That's right. The 5.5 films.
All right, Tyler, what's your number four, Tyler? Do your best Tyler for a saver.
For Tyler. Oh, my number four.
Hi, I'm Tyler.
Tyler
does not sound like
Jack Nance and David Lynch.
Oh, so good.
The most notable movie I can go with is Eraserhead. I will never forget that. I was made to watch that in high school as a 16-year-old.
Is this Avery or Tyler? It's hard to tell the difference.
That was me.
You were made to watch it in sixth grade?
No, as a 16-year-old in high school.
Oh, okay.
I took a movie elective, and that was like one of the first things he showed us. And it was, I will never unsee that movie.
Well, it's a comedy.
which a lot of people don't realize. It is a comedy. Like the more you, so, I've probably seen it 4 or 5 times now, and it gets funnier and funnier every time I see it. It really is funny.
You are sick.
It's very, very funny.
And the most notable thing about the film teacher was, so there'd be an obvious bedroom scene. So it would be two characters would be undressing, making out in a bedroom. It would fade to black. They would wake up the next morning and they would be like making breakfast in their robes. And he would just turn the movie down and go, "That means they had sex."
What a weirdo.
And he would do it for
this guy needs to be reported.
He would do that for every
single Is this the only subtext movie that he pointed out?
Every time, without fail, no matter how obvious, it could be a graphic sex scene.
Who would he be looking at?
He would be looking at the screen, and then he would just turn away from the projector to the class and go, "That means they had
would
sex."
Would he be like singling out and saying this to like one young lady or something?
Oh, no, it was just to the class as though... as though we missed the subtext, as though, oh, that was an allegory for death.
Was he doing it for jokes, for yucks, or was that's the only subtext that he responded to?
He was very
and felt
serious.
That was worthy of imparting on the youth.
Wow. He was very serious. And now I think of that every single time I see a sex scene in movies.
That's terrible. He's implanted. He imprinted that.
You should say that loudly.
I do. I just turned to whoever I'm going to think of. That means
no, but like, you know, like the awkward, like, "That means they had sex."
It was the weirdest thing. And he loved playing tennis with Rainn Wilson. It was a very strange
So Jack Nance and Eraserhead and Wild at Heart, Twin Peaks. What else he got him in?
He was in almost all his movies.
He was in a lot, yes. He was in
movie. I was looking at his IMDb page, Wikipedia page.
Well, they left off Eraserhead. No, I'm kidding. All right, what's your number?
Says after Eraserhead.
Okay, what's your number three there, Barbara?
Three comedy for me, 3C. God, I should have looked this up. Avery, you may know this, though. Off the top of your head, the Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost trilogy is known as the something.
Cornetto.
That's exactly what it is. Thank you very much. And it was a product, fictional product, and here it is.
Is it fictional ice cream?
Oh, I thought it was real ice cream.
Oh, I assumed it was like red apple cigarettes. So, you know what? That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that.
It was like brand.
Yeah, it's. I believe it's real.
Oh, it's like Carnation.
It's an Italian brand of frozen dessert.
No shit. Gelato. Okay. Three films together, of course, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. I don't think I need to sell our audience on that collaboration. Number three, dramatic for me. One had to come first. I'm going Scorsese and DiCaprio. Scorsese and DiCaprio, Leonardo DiCaprio, Martin Scorsese, teamed up on 6 films so far, although the list I saw included Killers of the Flower Moon, which has yet to be released.
Not according to me. It's my top 5 most anticipated 2022.
That's right. I forgot.
Son of a bitch. It was supposed to be 2022 for the longest time. All right. COVID.
So you know the answer, or you know the story behind this, Anderson. Their first collaboration was on Gangs of New York, which was supposed to be a early Scorsese film, which got backburnered, shelved. I guess he never got around to making it. He was going to make it with De Niro, and then he aged out of it, and he finally got around to making it in 2002 with his new beau. Do you think it's uncomfortable for De Niro and
we'll talk about DiCaprio. This.
Okay. Later. Gangs of New York in 2002, The Aviator 2004, The Departed, his best film, both of them, Shutter Island, The Wolf of Wall Street, and the upcoming, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, it's upcoming.
Oh, it's upcoming.
All right.
A $200 million Apple TV movie.
What, Irishman?
No, the fucking Flower Moon.
Oh, yeah, it's Apple.
I was looking at budgets, and I was looking at...
sorry, buddy.
The budget for the Irishman was $200 million. I think what they have reported, it's really hard to tell because of Netflix, you know, how they're so cagey with, but I think it only brought in $20 million is what they're suggesting. I can't.
Like, is that box office? Or, cause I saw it in the theater.
Yeah. So maybe it's just, I don't know.
Wait, what was $20 million to box office?
Irishman. Yeah. What the
fuck? That was,
but that was a big Netflix movie. That was like their tentpole movie of the year.
Yeah, so how many, like, I was talking with this, with my buddy, like, it's so hard to tell, right, with the streaming services and Netflix and Prime, but, like, because you used to be able to see the box office, you'd be able to tell if it made its money back. They don't have to disclose what the deals are at Hulu and Prime. They're cagey. And also, with a movie like White Noise, which we covered last week, Noah Baumbach's White Noise, which
evidently I might have been speaking out of turn, and apparently like it wasn't even like a Noah Baumbach a passion project. Like he doesn't really care about that material. Like I think that he was just hired gun. He got a shit ton of money from Netflix. Oh, what kind of a move though is that? Like financial move, like business move for Netflix. Like how many people are getting a Netflix subscription because they have a middling Noah Baumbach project?
That's interesting. So I'm wondering, and there's probably people out there who know a lot more about this than you and I. My thinking the thinking used to be that Netflix just wanted new subscribers, right? Well, they're probably at a critical mass where they're just trying to keep subscribers happy, right? They're just like, we've got to produce a certain amount of content, movies, series, documentaries, whatever, to keep these subscribers happy.
No, I think you're backwards.
Really?
Yeah, because at first they were trying to build the library, and they were just trying to get as much streaming content as they could. And they started making their own, which they had control of, and you know, it was sex appeal and like big names, you know, signing deals. But then they got to the point where now they're just trying to get like subscribers that would have never thought. From what I heard, like it was foreign language films, Spanish in particular is really going to bring in new subscribers. Like that market would do them well. White Noise doesn't make any sense to me, and I. Mm.
They're also doing a thing where they'll take a TV show, and if it does well, they will make the exact same TV show almost word for word in different languages.
Just
for different
it?
Countries, yes.
Hmm. Hmm.
Almost identical. There's one show where I think it's literally an identical translation, line for line, almost shot for shot.
Didn't know.
And it's very successful.
Huh.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Oh, Los Groupers.
It's not a TV show.
Los Groupers.
Come on, buddy. Leave money on the table.
All right, so here, let me get there real quick. I'll read what I was reading. So yeah, they have this thing, collaboration chart. It doesn't matter, but the budget for The Irishman was 159 to 200 million estimated, and the gross was 8 million. They just have gross. Right. They don't have, you know, I don't know if that's box office.
I assume it's from a limited run because it was Oscar eligible.
Yeah, obviously. But I mean that it was maybe in a couple two four theaters. I don't know.
I saw it.
In the theater?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Really?
I believe you, but
did you see it in theaters?
You saw it in the theaters?
Yeah, I did. It was playing at the AMC.
No, right? I didn't see it in the theaters.
Jesus.
Yeah. I think it was in like Dolby or something, too. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Atmos.
We come to this place.
All right.
to watch old men pretend to be young.
Jesus. That fight scene. Oh, no.
I think we're at number three for Tyler Mayer.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Tyler May. Okay.
hey, I'm Tyler May.
Why is he saying his own name?
I don't know. Since all good impressions start. Number three is Mel Brooks and Madeline Kahn.
Oh, good choice. Well, that's my number two, so I should just piggyback.
Pig it.
His favorite is Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
Is yours not? They say the end.
No, it's so close. I love Young Frankenstein. I know. History of the World, Part One. Just to go different, I'll go Young Frankenstein, but she's fucking fantastic in all of those, plus High Anxiety. They have four films together. Is that Tyler everything else
I'm
to
not
say?
Tyler. I don't know if you have anything else to say.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
You got to crack the voice.
Oh, that's right.
I'm Tyler Mayer.
All right, number three for me. Is
Please.
That what we're doing?
Did we skip you? Are we on two?
Did we miss you? He bumped up to two because Tyler Mayer's three was his two. So Tyler, Ryan just jumped on, right?
No, we did three. I did Scorsese and DiCaprio.
Yeah,
and
we skipped me.
Edgar Wright.
Okay. This one is one of legend. I like some of these films. I can't say that I love them, but it has to be on the list. Because Werner Herzog and Klaus Kinski is a collaboration that was...
volatile.
Some might say volatile. It was a marriage...
some might say volatile.
A marriage made in hell, perhaps. There's rumors, there's folklore, there's myths.
Legend.
That, legend that guns were held at certain actors' torsos and heads off camera while he was forced to read his lines because
like a hostage
because he was threatening to leave so many sets, so many movies, so many pictures.
Is that you're going to get Anderson's interview for your documentary?
Werner was considered like a Klaus.
Talk about how you cried.
I do need that.
A Klaus whisper.
I need that listener art.
I better see a tear. You're going to wear this fucking gun.
There's a great
going to wear this bullet.
Mini documentary called
Oh, I'm going to draw a blank now. I used to have it on VHS tape. I've cited it on the show a few times, but it's called Please Kill Mr. Kinski.
Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Please. And it's a couple producers openly admitting to the fact that they were considering having Klaus Kinski killed to collect the insurance because they were so fucked because of his behavior on sets. So I think it's called Please Kill Mr. Kinski. Can you look that up and see if that's on IMDb?
That's very fun.
Please
that's
call fun. Mr. So Werner Herzog and Klaus Kinski, despite, I mean, I think anyone who knows, you know, is familiar with Werner Herzog, they won't be surprised to when I say that, you know, he's kind of fueled by chaos. And I think that's one of the main reasons. He respected Klaus Kinski, what he brought to the table. Mm-hmm. I always thought Klaus was, God, thank God he's not within arm's reach, but
he'd find you.
I always found him to be a bit dramatic, a bit schmaltzy, a bit over the top, a bit dramatic for my own taste. But I did like him in Nosferatu the Vampire. That was a fun one. Wojciech Fitzcarraldo is really his, for me, was his chief.
His fillet.
His fillet. Mm. Yeah, I know, of
not
course. Aguirre. The Wrath of God. I think
second
I might
or
be
third best.
Is that how you said that guy's name? Aguirre?
Aguirre?
Yeah, of course. I always fuck that up. God damn, I'm stupid. I hate when my stupidity is just on full display.
It
which
is.
Aguirre,
The Wrath of God. Please Kill Mr. Kinski.
Please Kill Mr.
1999.
I would imagine that's on IMDb. Fun. It's a fun watch. It really is a fun watch. It's bizarre watching two grown adults.
You said IMDb, but I think about YouTube.
YouTube. Openly admit to the fact that they were conspiring to kill another human
that's
being.
That's great.
And you know, they're kind of laughing school. About it, but they're serious too.
Kind of like The Art of Killing. Remember that documentary? It's like good old jovial times talking about torture and killing.
Yes, of course. I remember that they're re-releasing that, like the director's
really?
Cut. Yeah,
oh, fun.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Great.
That fucking dick puking on the, on the rooftop. Yeah. It just went on for
speaking
5 minutes.
Speaking of dramatic.
I'm like, all right.
Speaking of overly dramatic.
This guy realizes people are going to be watching. He's really trying to lay it on thick that he feels bad to the point of heaving. I'm not buying it. Please end.
I'm not buying it.
The Look of Silence, I liked that one quite a bit. That was the follow-up. Look
of Silence.
Remember The Look of Silence?
Yeah, part two. And I think they're both nominated for Oscars.
Both made by Oppenheimer and both disturbing. I think Look of Silence was more disturbing. Mm. Just openly talking like, this is where we take them down and butcher them. It was good times, right? Remember we cut off the boobs?
Cut off the boobs.
See where the milk came from? That was crazy, right? High five.
Oh, to be young again.
Fucking crazy.
You just wasted on the young.
Human beings, man. Right,
you got a number two, back to back.
Quick break?
No, quick Reiki. Reiki, Reiki.
Let's do Anderson's number two after that. Yeah, we're back. Why did we take a break again?
You just had to jam in your joke.
You reminded me.
Where are we at?
So we got to do your number two.
Yeah, my number two, which has already been burned by you, shit. And that's the old Paul Thomas Anderson and Philip Seymour Hoffman. Yeah,
so
of course, Hard Eight, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love, and The Master. You know what? It was in the running there for number one for a minute because of what these two did together and how they collaborated and made different things each time. And completely
he was such
different
a different
characters.
Character in every one of those movies.
Yes, Philip Seymour Hoffman is not going to bring the same character to, and Paul Thomas Anderson, that's I wouldn't imagine he would want the same character, you know, brought to him. So, God, just one of the all-time greats that gone way too quick.
Scotty.
And, so it's my
he's an idiot.
Third favorite collaboration, according to this list, of all time. My third favorite.
Third to number two.
It is.
Okay.
I got a tie.
Oh, I see.
I got a tie for duels.
Well, I got a tie also.
Jesus Christ, that was loud.
Number one,
a
comedic.
A lot of energy.
You know, I'll breeze past this one because we talked about it a little bit. Of course, the Coen brothers and John Goodman. What are you doing?
Creating feedback to drown you out.
Little Brian in stereo.
Anderson sabotaging. Coen brothers and John Goodman, of course, seven films as discussed. However, they were just as successful and even more prolific with, now this is a bit of an inside baseball because they, Francis McDormand was married to a Coen brother. However, they produced nine films together. Blood Simple, Raising Arizona, small part admittedly, Miller's Crossing, uncredited, Barton Fink, Fargo, of course, The Man Who Wasn't There, Burn After Reading, Hail Caesar, and The Tragedy of Macbeth.
And you know what? To pile on to Philip Seymour Hoffman,
Macbeth
bring us
was the best one of that.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It was certainly the most recent.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I felt bad for everyone in the movie except for the witch. She knew what she was singing. She knew what page to turn, but everyone else was like, way too serious.
What are we doing here?
But yeah, so Philip Seymour Hoffman brought something different to the table. Frances McDormand, she brought something different to every single one of those roles. Completely different.
Oh, Blood Simple to Fargo? Completely, yeah. The 180.
I wonder if she stayed in character. Like, he had to, like, sleep with different versions of his wife during these...
The horrible accent.
I don't think that's possible because he wouldn't have written her character to be so obnoxious and annoying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. If that was the case, he'd be like a sex fiend.
Sexy bombshell.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you think anyone watched Macbeth more than once?
The editor.
Do you think...
God damn that movie.
Outside of that, I don't think anyone.
You don't think anybody would... Honey, you gotta sit down and watch this one with me.
You ever read the fake...
I think Shakespeare himself would tap out after Red Bull. Like, that was good. Let's watch Othello. Let's watch it. Oh.
Do you read the... I actually watched... Oh, Jesus Christ, in the theater. Did you read the fake review from Ethan Coen on
No, you Macbeth? Were talking about that.
Pretty
no. Good.
Pretty funny. Mm. What a shame, huh? What a shame. Wasted energy. Wasted. All right, so.
Oh, wait, we're all over the place. Oh, I fucked up. Wait, no, I didn't. Oh, but I did.
All right.
We're all over the place. I didn't do my number two dramatic, so we got to catch up on that.
Oh, yeah, because you jump ship. So go ahead. Do your two dramatic. I just did my two only.
Because then I need to do the
and
two.
And then we do, Tyler. Yeah, we do Tyler. So we're
number
so
two
we're
on dramatic. Track. I mean, it's obvious. But of course, you know, ever edging out Scorsese and DiCaprio, Scorsese and De Niro. How does it get much better?
They did make more than one, didn't
they? They made quite a number of films, actually. 10 films over five decades. Good read. Starting with Mean Streets, ending most recently with The Irishman and the upcoming Killers of the Flower Moon.
Have you seen them all?
I've not seen Killers of the Flower Moon.
Have you seen all the other collabs, Berber?
I've seen like all but like five Scorsese films. It looks like there's one, two, three,
how many? Have you seen
four.
The King? You haven't seen The King of Comedy?
Still haven't seen King of Comedy. Please sit down. And I haven't seen, wait, one more here. Oh, New York, New York, which I hear is not that great.
It's a lot of singing, but De Niro, saxophone playing. Mm. You haven't seen the audition either, have you?
I don't know what that is.
More on that later.
Oh, actually, yes, I do know what that is because I clicked on that. I was like, what the fuck is that? I'm like, not for me.
Why is it not? Okay,
no, more it's not a that. Film.
All right, number two for Tyler Mayer.
Tyler Mayer. number two is Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yorgos.
Oh.
And Angeliki Papoulia.
Your name came up on our phone call.
Oh, did it?
Because I'm like, thanks a lot, dude. You know, I got to say that name now. You hear me stumble through it? And he's like, Avery will help you. I'm like, thank God you're right.
That's what I'm here for. Best collaboration between these two is definitely Dogtooth.
Mm-hmm. She's the older sister in Dogtooth.
The one who the titular Dogtooth is a part of. No longer.
That was a stretch.
I mean, what are you doing?
I'm talking about Dogtooth.
Here you are.
I'm just talking about Dogtooth.
All right.
I can dig it.
I can dig it. What? All right. What's where are we going now? That was a deep pull.
That was.
What else is she in? Oh, man. I'll look it up because he went about it a little differently than you and I did. And because I think she's in The Lobster. Yorgos.
Is she in The Favorite or something?
She's in, let's see.
Sacred
Deer. This is the part where we look shit up.
Not me.
All right.
Sacred Deer.
Here it is. Alps. Alps and The Lobster.
Okay.
So he just caught up with Tyler Mayer just caught up with Alps recently, which... I've talked about it on the show. Alps, it was a great premise. However, I don't feel like Yorgos really. I don't think he made the movie he wanted to make because it's meandering, it's slow, it's hard to follow. But the whole premise was, if you lose a loved one, we are an acting troupe that will impersonate that loved one and let them live with you for a while to help ease the pain. Which I like. There's a lot of different directions you can go there, right? And all the directions that
I like to have lots and lots of sex with my loved ones. So, you guys know what to do.
So you're just immediately turning into like a predator's role. Like you're just going in there and saying,
I enjoy daily blowjobs.
They're like, Uncle Teddy never did that though. And you're like, that's not in my notes. In my notes, Uncle Teddy got blowjobs all day.
Round the clock.
Brian, I feel like you're you would be fired from this Alps company quite soon, quite early. Oh. I don't know if you'd last.
Hey, the first how's gig. The new guy's first day on the job?
He's drained.
Yes. All right. What is this? He worked an extra shift? No. Well, sort of.
All right.
Extra shaft.
I heard it too, Brian. I just didn't say it. What are we, a locker room show? What the fuck?
Number one.
I just followed up. What the fuck? All right. What, number one for you?
Whenever you're ready. If you still got more to say about Lanthimos or...
No, well, Alps and the Alps. Shaft and the extra shift and the draining. No, the drainage. I'm done.
He's drained. Number one,
like in my acting class, mm-hmm. which Atticus and I do 2-3 times a month. I like to try and do it every week, but you know, Thursday sometimes it doesn't matter. That's not the point. The point is this: they're mentally challenged actors, mm-hmm. IDD, and
you can just say actors
because all actors are mentally challenged, and. You know, it's an acting class. It's a 2-hour acting class that we go to on Thursdays. Saturdays is a 3-hour class, which we make sometimes, but it's tough with scheduling. But one of the exercises is they memorize like famous lines and quotes from movies and then recite them. And just out of the fucking blue, one of the main lines that's uttered or recited is I drink your milkshake. So we'll be in the middle of like a certain exercise and one of my favorite dudes will just scream out like, I drink your milkshake. And it just delights me to no fucking end. And I'll call back, I drink it up. And that just delights
that's
him.
Good.
It's good shit. Yeah. It's really good. I don't know
Eli,
what triggered that.
Eli.
You're just a boy.
You're just a afterbirth.
You think it's over the top?
It's the best overacting I've ever seen in my life. Oh, it's so good. All right.
What if your sermons, Eli?
He earned it. Because by that point in the movie, he earned it. We had 2 hours with that guy. We're like, all right, cut loose.
Nice little business. 10,000 a week.
At times I look into a man's eyes and see nothing worth like. Take him to the Peachtree dance.
Get all lick it up.
I did want to go to the Peachtree dance. It did sound appealing.
It does, right?
It did sound appealing.
The Peachtree dance sounds great. I thought it was dams the first 3 times I saw it. I think it's just a place where they hang out and drink.
Peachtree dish?
Peachtree dance.
Yeah,
but it's a dance.
But he's liquored up, so it's hard to tell.
Sure. That's a good point.
All right. What's your number?
Number one. Well, like I alluded to earlier, sometimes there's just an obvious one that you have to do number one. And you look for ways around it, but it's just right there. And you'd be remiss. You'd look like a fool if you didn't have it as your number one.
Are you red herring us?
What do you mean?
I don't know.
I don't know what that means. Red herring? Yeah. Like Hitchcock? No, I did Hitchcock.
Yeah, no, it seems like you're taking us down one road, which is obvious, but you're going to like come hit us with a left hook, which is going to upset me or something. Well, look at the grin. Look at the grin.
It's amusing to me that you wouldn't already know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm talking about just 3 films, but I mean, left did mark on cinematic history. James Cameron and Michael Biehn. The Terminator, Aliens, and The Abyss. It doesn't get any better. Yeah, listen, they could have gone on and made many, many movies together, but you perfect the trilogy, and it's like, yeah, okay, you know what? We can't improve on this.
Do you think Michael Biehn is...
thinking about me right now?
Is
hopefully
green with envy that he's not blue?
Oh, I anticipate him making an appearance at some point.
You think so?
Yeah. Be like a village elder.
Why is not...
Why are there no old Na'vi?
They don't make it that long.
There's no like wrinkled Na'vi. They're all young and virile.
Yeah.
Because like that would defeat the purpose of getting a stimescent for them. Yeah. Right?
That's a good point. Well, that's a genre.
That's a separate fantasy
plan. Right. Like the original storyboards came in. There was a few like elders and Cameron screamed. He says, no, nothing but sex.
Not hot enough.
Sex appeal.
I'm too soft.
good stuff. They actually, I don't know if there's a fun bit of trivia, they actually had a Oscar campaign for Michael Biehn for The Abyss to no avail. Didn't get nominated.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I almost did Michael Biehn listener art. There was almost...
Oh, that would have lined up.
Yeah.
All right, number one for me is... Actually, I don't want to take pole position. I'm going to have to. I mean, it's a lesser of two evils, but do Tyler's.
Tyler Mayer.
I know what Tyler's number one is.
Number one for Tyler Mayer is George Roy Hill and Paul Newman.
Paul Newman, yeah.
Yeah.
These two made Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Sting, and one of my all-time favorites, Slapshot.
Mm.
Those are close to three perfect movies in their own way. Like The Sting is arguably the closest thing to a perfect movie that's ever been made. Butch Cassidy, in his own right, is very perfect, despite the Singing in the Rain bicycle scene.
And that is so weird. It's so out of place.
And Slapshot is just pure fucking bliss. Yeah. If you're a boy in like hockey, it was written
by
a woman, R-rated Nancy comedy. Dowd, who was actually setting out to make a documentary about this strange Canadian sport of hockey. And the three goddamn close to perfect movies. So it's a very, very good number one. That's why it's not tied for my number one. I had to have it on my number one. And if goddamn Bobby D and Scorsese hadn't really kind of turned me on to my love of film at a very impressionable age, George Roy Hill and Paul Newman would be my number one. But I had to have Bobby D and all of his goddamn movies on my list. Cause I mean, it is the
Scorsese, of course.
For an American film viewer such as myself, or such as all of us, I mean, there's really nothing that really compares to it, I don't think. So it would have been lying if I didn't have it on my list. Now, speaking of the one one of the many that are few that aren't have been seen by you, Brad, you've seen Mean Streets.
Yes.
Seen Taxi Driver. Yes. I've not seen New York, New York.
No.
Nope. Raging Bull, you seen.
Yes.
You got that? King of Comedy, you have not seen.
No.
No. Goodfellas, you've seen. Cape Fear, you've seen.
Yep.
Casino, you've seen. Irishman, you've seen. You will see Killers of the Flower Moon. The Audition. Now, The Audition is a $70 million short film. I think it's 16 minutes long. And it came out like 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Came out. And it's, if you watch this thing, it's available on YouTube. It's shocking that it cost $70 million. Now, it stars Leo and Bob De Niro. Do they blow
up a gold bar?
And then Brad Pitt shows up for the last third. Exactly in the fashion that you would imagine him to be. There's no whodunit here. There's no coming. Like, you know exactly where this thing's going from the get go. It's cute and funny, but it would have been better in maybe 5 minutes. And it's,
you say it's too long at 16 minutes,
16 minutes. And with these heavy hitters too, it's the first time the Scorsese ever directed Brad Pitt ever. That's or DiCaprio and De Niro at the same time, and they're sharing scenes, and it's interesting because DiCaprio and De Niro, of course, they were great in This Boy's Life. What else were they in? They were in something else together. Fuck, what was it? Drawing a blank. They were in some other movie, but the whole premise of this is Scorsese has got something going on in his head, is the way he says it. He's not sure what it is yet, and he wants them to both. Take a look at this role. So they both show up at Macau, China, right? Okay. At the same time at this big, glorious hotel. And they're both like going over their lines at the same time. They both get out of the cars at the same time, De Niro and DiCaprio, and they see each other. And they're like being real cagey with each other. Like, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? What do you got behind your back? What are you hiding there? And it's like, and then they see that they're both, you know, reading from the same script. And then Marty comes out and he meets them in the lobby there. And it's this fun little three-way conversation. And, Scorsese's doing Curb Your Enthusiasm type thing, where he's like, you're not so much competing. You're vying. You're vying for the same part. You're not competing. You ever vie? You vied. You're vying. He's definitely doing a Larry David thing. And it's very paint by numbers. The fact that it cost $70 million. They didn't even shoot. So then they go to
wait for 16 minutes. It was 70 million.
They go to Tokyo and then
they bought a Fabergé egg.
They go somewhere else. And so this was paid for and bought by a casino hotel in China. And they have very strict rules that you're not allowed to advertise casinos. However, they found like a loophole and they're like, well, if we produce this movie where they're blurring the lines between advertisement and like fiction with these big actors, we can get away with it. So they paid $70 million. $13 million went to each of the actors. Brad Pitt as well. 2 days of work. Yeah. 2 days of work.
Damn, that's half the budget.
And
three actors.
I can say the first, four or 5 minutes is okay. Yeah. And then it just doesn't really take any chances or do anything. It's just, you know, it's a payday for these guys.
Is that the most an actor's been paid per?
Could be. I mean, I'm
per minute. Yeah.
And they didn't even have to leave New York. They shot it all in New York.
It's like Vin Diesel. Imaged. Vin Diesel getting paid per word.
Yeah.
For fucking Groot.
He is Groot, though.
Right. Just, that's all his dialogue.
So that's my number one, like officially, is the old Bobby D. And it's cute. It's fun. You want it to be more. You definitely wanted more with those three working together and then Brad Pitt showing up at the end. And the punchline is not really that funny. It is what it is. But it's on YouTube if you like to watch. What, $70 million looks like?
$7 million short.
Jesus Christ. Watch that movie and realize that they could have made 7 Pulp Fictions.
They could have made 70 Grouperses. They could have made 140 Grouperses.
Oh, no. Groupers was 85,000.
Oh, so. No shit. I thought it was more than that.
I don't even know what the number is. What would the number be? I don't even know. It's something astronomical. Like something like 900,000 Groupers or something. I think 9,000 Groupers.
No, it's only 700 Groupers, right? 700 times 100,000?
I don't know. Don't make me do math when I've had a beer, my first beer in a week. Let's go.
I sell a lot of Groupers.
How much is Groupers?
85,000. Oh. 85. I mean, if you count my 5,000 that I put in at the end, then it's 85. But if you count, like, you know, what I raised and put in initially.
I did that. 85,000. I did that incorrectly. Hold on.
70 million divided by 85,000.
This is sad.
This is extremely sad. It's going to be 700.
Fuck this up. There's this one. This up so many times.
Yeah. You want me to just do it on paper?
No.
Because there's a lot of zeros in that million, 70 million. There's a whole lot of zeros. I was told there'd be no math. With this show?
That's right.
I told you all those years ago. I said, I'll do the show, Brian, but there's got to be math at some point.
That's not
you
correct.
Won't know God when.
Damn it, I keep
all right, I'm going to do this. I'm doing this. This is the part of the show where they do math.
I can't even do it with calculator.
We.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, I hired you.
You did not hire me, Brian. You want me to walk?
I recruited you.
You want me to walk right now? I can't even find where my calculator is. That's how bad I am.
Part of the problem is you're using your calendar.
All right, I have the final number. You got it. You could have made 823 Groupers.
That's it? I wanted 9,000. God, I'm dumb. All right. Are you sure? I don't trust Avery. I don't trust him. No,
why? I got the answer so fast.
823.529. That doesn't seem like... It seems like there should be more.
825 Groupers is plenty of Groupers.
That's a good point. 800 Groupers 821 is coming out, guys.
It's a franchise.
All right.
It's the Grouper Cinematic Universe.
Let's do also
rans. Strikes again.
Also rans. Also rans.
I got none.
Really?
Well, I probably have some. The one I alluded to earlier.
31 26 episode seasons of Groupers.
How many? What?
That's 31 26 episode seasons of Groupers.
Jesus.
31 26. Oh, I see. I see what you're saying.
31 seasons of 27.
Akira Kurosawa and Takashi.
I don't know that name.
Shimura made 21 films together.
Oh, my God.
And Akira Kurosawa made 30 films total. So do the math there, Brian. Get out a calculator there, Avery. Let's figure this out. I'm more than two-thirds of the movies.
I was going to say that Kurosawa somewhere around 70%.
And we just saw him recently in oh, Jesus Christ. Andrew Martin signed it to us on Drawn Blank on the Night.
Ikiru? Was that it?
And they just remade it. Correct. They just remade it with Bill Nighy called Living.
Should we do the listener list first before also rans?
Yeah. Sorry.
Listener list compiled by the Bitch Murns. Two-way tie.
Host of number five.
Host of the film Vaulters. Hard R. Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes. And Ron Howard and Clint Howard.
Yeah, that's a good one. Clint Howard's been in almost all of Ron Howard's films.
Well, it's because he's there on set. And Ron's like, all right.
Yeah, you're hanging around. Come on, hop in there.
Number four, six-way tie with 3 votes each. Kurosawa and, I don't know how you say his name, Mifune?
Yeah, he's in a lot too, but not as many as Takashi.
John Ford and John Wayne, Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, Wes Anderson and Bill Murray, Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson and a lot of people.
Yeah, and Hoffman, David Fincher and Brad Pitt, and the Coens and Goodman. Mm-hmm. Number three, a tie with 5 votes each, Sam Jackson and Tarantino.
How about that?
And John Carpenter and Kurt Russell.
I believe John Carpenter and never mind. Keep it going.
Number two is Jeremy Saulnier and Macon Blair.
Hey, look at that. That's a good one.
And number one, of course, is Scorsese and De Niro.
There you go.
Ikiru.
The one Ikiru. I was alluding Ikiru. To, which was the collaboration that jumped to mind for me was Tim Burton and Johnny Depp. It felt like Johnny Depp was in every Tim Burton movie for a stretch. And then I looked at it, I'm like, there's a couple good movies in there.
Oh, they're no good ones.
Well, Edward Scissorhands.
A great one.
Ed Wood.
Okay one.
Sleepy Hollow.
Good one.
No.
Yeah, a great one.
Sleepy Hollow?
I'm going to say yes.
No, it's not good.
I'll tell you.
Corpse Ride. Animated doesn't count. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney. Love it.
Alice in Wonderland and no. Dark Shadow.
Dark Shadow.
Also, Rayans. Bye bye.
I almost put Judd Apatow and Seth Rogen on my comedic list. Linklater and Ethan Hawke have made a number of movies together. I wanted to get clever so bad to enrage you and just do John Ratzenberger and Pixar.
Mm-hmm. I would have.
I couldn't kill
the spirit of this list.
James Cameron, of course, Michael Biehn, but also Schwarzenegger and Bill Paxton.
Sad.
Tarantino and Thurman. Spielberg and Tom Hanks, Oliver Stone and Johnny McGinley. John C. McGinley has been like all of his movies.
I know. I almost had him on my list.
Fincher and Brad Pitt.
When I talked to, John C. McGinley on Loveline, and I was talking.
I was there.
How much I loved his character in Platoon, and I remember he was just like, "Yeah, that was a really good one."
Didn't he come in to promote Identity? Was he in that?
He was. I think
it was right around.
Steve McQueen and Michael Fassbender almost made my list. Darren Aronofsky and Mark Margolis, who we know as the old grandfather in Breaking Bad with the bell, but he's in so many of Darren Aronofsky's early movies, especially he's in Pi. Noah Baumbach and his Greta Gerwig as his significant other. David O. Russell and Christian Bale have made three. Movies together, including the most recent Amsterdam, and they're working together right now. And a little birdie told me that Christian Bale finally had it out with David O. Russell, which I thought was shocking that he could make three movies with this guy
and
who's
not,
notoriously difficult to work with. And Christian Bale skated, and apparently, because Christian Bale is famous for screaming and yelling at.
That's true.
Apparently, that DP that he was screaming and yelling at.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, apparently, like, everyone, I think I might have told you this before, but, like, everyone on set was like, thank God someone's finally doing this, because this guy's a piece of work. Apparently, everyone has a hard time working with that DP. Mm-hmm. So they were very happy that Christian Bale did that, but apparently, he and David Russell, who are both known as screamers on set, finally.
Cantankerous.
Yeah. Luc Besson and Jean Reno.
Jean Reno.
But they've worked on. I don't have these written for my also rans, but trust me. Danny Boyle and Uma McGregor have worked on a ton, as well as James L. Brooks and Jack Nicholson and Albert Brooks. They've all three of them. John Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis have worked on a number together. Of course, Coen Brothers Goodman. Francis Ford Coppola and James Caan. And Tom Waits and Nicolas Cage all worked on a number of films. Francis Ford Coppola, David Cronenberg, and Viggo Mortensen.
Sexy.
Neil Jordan and Brendan Gleeson. And Stephen Ray.
Those names.
And Stephen Ray. What's that?
I don't know either one of those names.
You don't know Neil Jordan?
Keep going.
Are you kidding me with Brendan Gleeson? I will.
Is there a letter dollar Gleeson?
I'll pretend that this is a vibrator and I will do with
right
it.
Right in the eye.
Right in the eye.
Are we rowing?
And James Gunn and Michael Rooker have had some fun times on set together a number of times. So these were all in the running at one time or another on my list. And there's some good collaborations.
What about James Gunn and Sean Gunn? His brother is in a lot of his films.
It's great.
Often motion captured.
It's fantastic. Right, thank you.
FYI.
I almost did Andy Serkis and...
Jackson.
Jackson, Peter Jack.
You never see Andy Serkis on screen.
What do
we? No, I'm saying it's a digitized version.
No, but what do we see him in? And then we loved him in?
The Black Panther.
No, not that one, Brian. How dare you? All right. Set you up. All right, let's get out of here.
No, we're gambling. Gamble.
We are gambling. What was the last week?
Is Michael Cole keeping track of this now that we have stakes for the gambling beyond?
He should. I hope
ultimate
he is.
Stakes.
It was the one that we thought was going to be bad, but ended up being okay. Plane.
That's what it was.
Plane Jane.
Well, do you have the...
I remember the top of my head. I said 52 and Anderson said 41.
Is that true?
I didn't write it down.
I'm weird like that.
You said 52.
You and Gina both said 41.
Oh, that does sound familiar.
Yeah. I could pull it up and play it. I have access.
All right. With
I like hearing about him, right?
That cannot be true. With 115, there's no way that's true. With 115 reviews, the Rotten Tomatoes score is 75%.
Yes!
Making Brian the winner.
No, that's not how we're doing this.
I think you both might have to see
Brian, plane. Keep it up, dude. You keep fucking with me, and we give them back. No, you might have to see Brady at 80 or whatever it's called.
I'm actually excited about
that. Are you?
I feel like I've seen the trailer now multiple times, and I got the idea.
I can't imagine how that movie ever got greenlit.
80 for Brady.
I get that like older women might want to go see it, but
they call my buddy Scott from Massachusetts, and he's from Boston, and he probably greenlit it.
But I mean, Boston people are going to go see it just because it's Brady, are they?
Fucking yeah.
Even though it's that movie,
like
they'll forgive everything that surrounds it. Because
of course, to fillet.
Because I was thinking like
it's his fillet.
I could see like it's targeted at old ladies, but there's even like going to be old ladies who aren't going to want to see like anything about
football.
About football or about the Patriots because they hate the Patriots. You know, it's like a sliver. It's a very small audience. So wait, targeted.
Whoever wins the month assigns the movie to watch for the watch along.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And if we tie, the listeners get to decide.
This is brutal.
It's pretty good.
I have a movie I've been wanting to assign you so bad, but
just how
long am I going to wait to do this?
Which music, Doc?
Until we're caught up, because I mean, you've been fucking around with the listeners'
I've not.
Assignments.
you keep trying to die, and it's really impacting the show.
That's right.
No, but also, like, I assign it to you, and you're like, oh, we're supposed to watch that this week? I'm sorry. Here I sit, and I have not seen it. What's it called? That's happened a number of times, Brian, and we're falling
He's
behind.
He's very busy with work.
Thank you. I have a brain tumor.
It's another place to store your memories. You have more matter that's up there right. than most
that's
of us.
That's true. More mass.
Yeah.
All right. What are we gambling on this week?
We are gambling on Alice Darling. Mm-hmm.
What the fuck is that?
Now, I've heard things.
What is Alice Darling?
I've heard things about Alice Darling.
Can someone tell me something about this movie?
May have been good.
It's about Alice and how she's a darling.
And they may have been bad.
Tell me something about this. Who directed it? Who's in it?
Isn't Anna Kendrick in this?
Yes. Alice Darling.
Isn't it a thriller?
Is this seriously the biggest release of the week? That's brutal.
Yeah.
Well, this
January
is why we're,
17th.
This is why we're
today,
catching up. This is why we're catching up.
Okay.
It's a good time to catch up.
Alice Darling. I don't know anything about this.
A young woman trapped in an abusive relationship becomes the unwitting participant in an intervention staged by her two closest friends.
That's good.
Alice, Darling, Anna Kendrick.
Is this Scorsese?
Yes.
It is not. Unless he changed his name to Mary.
De Niro plays Anna Kendrick.
Wow.
All right. I'm ready when you are ready.
The fuck am I now?
I've heard things.
Mm. Okay. Let's
it was an official selection of TIFF.
Oh, was it?
I got a screener. I was going to watch it.
It's probably better than you didn't. You'd have a real advantage in that case.
It is 90 minutes on the nose, and I will give you my score on three.
Okay.
1, 2, 42. 38. I almost said 37.
No.
I said 42. Yeah, I was told by very generous film watchers that I should not waste my time.
Okay. I just went by the fact that it's in mid-January.
All right. For Alice Darling, Anderson gets 42. Brian gets 38. The current score with 22 reviews is 82%.
Fuck.
22.
It could drop by...
Substantially.
Yes. But how many people are seeing this?
Brutal.
I don't like the trailer. They're showing insertion.
Oh.
Jeez.
Really? What's it called?
Whoa.
It's called Alice Darling.
De Niro.
All right, here we go.
De Niro takes a vibe out of the eye.
Tyler, thank you very much for a solid list. It was fun to go over all of those collaborations, many of which were not really... that apparent
collabs.
Before doing the research, right? I had John Hughes and Anthony Michael Hall, Billy Wilder and Jack Lemmon, Werner Herzog and Klaus Kinski, Paul Thomas Anderson, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Did I also mention Philip Seymour Hoffman? I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson and John C. Reilly?
Yes, I believe you did. His
Should
name
have,
came
I
up.
I didn't. I almost had him on the list. George Roy Hill and Paul Newman, and of course, Scorsese and De Niro and DiCaprio. Yeah. Brian, you're 5-1. People like the 5-1.
5-1 is Avery. Write these down so I don't have to email them to you. Comedic.
No,
don't do that.
Adam McKay, Will Ferrell. Number 4, Paul Feig and Melissa McCarthy. Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg. And Nick Frost. Lest we forget Nick Frost. Mel Brooks and Madeline Kahn at number 2. And the Coen brothers and Francis McDormand / John Goodman. 5, Dramatic. Hitchcock and Stewart. PTA and PSH. Scorsese DiCaprio, Scorsese De Niro, and do I need to say it? James Cameron and Michael Biehn.
Do I need to say it?
Camping. And
can we get Tyler's list one last time? Avery started.
Yes, we can for Tyler Mayer. We got number 5, Coen Brothers and John Goodman. Number 4, Jack Nance and David Lynch. Number 3, Mel Brooks and Madeline Kahn. Number 2, Yorgos Lanthimos and Angeliki Papoulia.
Nice.
Papoulia? Nice. Papoulia? Nice. Whatever. And number 1, Papoulia. And number 1 is George Roy Hill and Paul Newman.
Good. Nice.
Nice. All right. Notes. Listener art. Oh, that's flattering. Oh, my headphones. God damn you, Peel.
I want to see. I'm not seeing.
Neil Orange Peel. You rapscallion. Good stuff. Well, the headphones going to become a thing? All right, thanks, Neil Orange Peel, for the listener art. Check it out on all of our social medias, if you will. Manatee feature artists this good. Week. Check them out over at AndersonandBryan.com.
It looks like you have ears on top of your head, and there's a separate set of cans up there.
Listening up top, like a blowhole. Thank you to all of our Patreon listeners. Check out AndersonandBryan.com. Check out Patreon.com/TheFilmVault. We have a spoiler edition up for Bardo. If that's a film you want to know more about, check that out. AndersonandBryan.com, the website, like I said, Anderson and Brian, the Instagram, The Film Vault on Facebook and Twitter, The Film Vault podcast on YouTube.
We got that tree going, right, on Instagram. Like you can see tree, all of our, the link tree. You can go to Instagram and see all of the links to all of our shit right there.
That's good. Nice. That's Anderson and Brian over on Instagram. Thanks, Giovanni, Ditch Burns, Mike Cole.
Ditch Burns.
Mitch Burch. Oh, no, Avery, update the second episode with Eric Kath, if you could. Because I read, I don't like to go back and forth.
I watched Gremlins with the boy today.
Okay. I will do.
Oh, really?
I watched Gremlins with the boy.
Did it freak him out?
A listener let me know a while ago when I was threatening to watch Gremlins with the boy. And they said, there's a scene, if you recall, with Phoebe Cates talking about why she hates Christmas. Make sure you fast forward.
Yeah,
because of Santa. So be careful with that if you're going to watch that with a youngin. I was capable of doing that quite easily because my boy is 6 and he's pretty easy to trick. So I said, hey, go tell your mom some bullshit. And then
there's a boring part of the
movie. And I fast forwarded. He was none the wiser. But yeah, the most active viewing I've ever seen him do of anything. Wow. He was so living and dying with everything that was happening in Gremlins.
How about that?
He's 6, not even 6 and a half yet, and might have been a little too early for him, but he loved it. He absolutely loved it. Gremlins.
Nice. All right, check out Invade the Decade. That's Avery's podcast. Till next time.
We do it for Van Gogh!